Any questions, comments about what we've covered so far? Maybe if you speak, please stand. What would you like to join?
Speaking of which, job security. One of the questions that I had was, I worked in a major corporation for 15 years, and I said that with the fairy tales you told yesterday, I might have been missing something because it was late in the afternoon and I was tired, but I didn't get a sense of male spirituality. I got a sense that using trickery or deceit and humor is what got the people in the fairy tales ahead. And the men that I work with in the corporation use humor and trickery to get themselves ahead. And I haven't quite seen that as spiritual.
Comments on that one?
This is just a very immediate response, but I think there's a difference between self-humor and the kind of humor that's sort of reparative and helping people to get over hard points, and that humor that takes people down. It's sort of one-upmanship, which I'm also very used to and know very well, but a kind of humor that's very competitive humor and very jarring to the system and to the psychic system. So maybe you could talk more about different kinds of humor. I think I'd like to know about that.
I suppose one big difference between greedy corporate tricksters and the real trickster is that the real trickster doesn't hoard stuff. His intent is not to gain wealth, or if it is, it's just to get it and then spread it around somewhere. And the trickster does have the divine calling from the supreme being to make way for humanity, or prepare the way for humanity. So there's a difference between a hero who uses trickery and a trickster. Also in these fairy tales, it's interesting, it shows middle-aged men lying, cheating, stealing, murdering, but only to those who are better off than they are. If you do that to people who are less well-off, you get killed in the stories. So the principal generativity is behind the trickster. Any other comments, questions, reactions? Well, this morning I was going to take a slightly different tact. As a thinking type, I can't help not talking about stories rather than just telling them to you. So I was going to discuss what I call the Tao of story, and the different kinds of stories there are and how we can use them in different ways. This is sort of part of a personal odyssey, starting off early on. Basically, in childhood, I loved fairy tales and science fiction. And then when I got to college, it was a little difficult at first because I had to switch to this way of sort of more rational thinking, like what is the evidence for this, or does this make sense, or, like scientific research methodology and things like that. It took me a little while to catch on that, oh, this is an entirely different way of thinking. Then I went through college, and the first 2 years of medical school were basically the same, learning science and stuff. And then come the clinical years where you're thrown in the hospital, and boy, was I adrift for a while until I realized, oh, there's a different way of thinking here too. It's no longer a matter of what evidence you have and what's true or not. It's what do you have to do now? Or what's the most reasonable thing to do given the limited information? Sort of a pragmatic rather than a scientific approach. And when I got that, I thought, oh, well, it was a lot easier. It's a different way of thinking. Then I was in medical school. I was also meditating to handle the stress and start getting these ecstatic experiences with kind of mystical in quality. So I thought, well, where is this coming from? And how do I match this with the pragmatic stuff that you have to do in the clinic and the hospital? So that's kind of the background of how I was trying to juggle all these different ways of thinking. Then when I got into stories, I realized gradually as working with them and working with people in therapy that each way of thinking comes from a different kind of story, and that each kind of story has its own uses. So maybe we can have the first slide. I'm a visual thinker, so I have to have a slide. Well, drawing from folklore and my own personal working with stories, came up with these basic types. The first would be reports. Those are supposed to be true. The factual stories like scientific reports, journalistic reports, annual reports from corporations, which actually may be the second category. The essence of a factual story or report is that you have evidence which can be corroborated by other people. As if you have an experience or something that only you have access to, so only you can decide whether something is true or not, as Wittgenstein pointed out, then you don't know whether it's true or not, because you know, how will you know whether you're accurately judging by your standards or not? But the important thing about the factual stories or reports is that it doesn't have to be just sense evidence. Like feelings and intuition also count as evidence, so long as you corroborate it and fit things together. In fact, a colleague and I did a study on intuition where we interviewed senior Freudian and Jungian psychoanalysts and senior business executives about how they used intuition. And they had a fairly common theme came out was that when they were younger, they didn't use intuition at all. They just used rational means because they had to justify their decisions and actions to superiors who wanted, you know, rational decisions. But as they got older and more confident and in more positions of authority, they would rely on their intuition more, just going by that. And there was a great quote from one executive who was the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar corporation. He said, when he was younger, he was an engineer by training, he could remember, he would get all the details of the projects, the pros and cons, cost analysis and stuff like that, and then make a decision and present it. And now he just used intuition. And that was fortunate because he could no longer remember the details. This is an actual true quote. Then the second category would be fairy tales that we've been talking about the past 2 days. And technically, as I mentioned before, they're defined as stories that are not meant to be believed. And fairy tales always have a little invocation at the beginning to tell you that. Like for Western stories, it's once upon a time. And that tells you to turn off your rational thinking. In African and Arabian cultures, and it was mentioned before, it's often once there was, or maybe once there wasn't, or long, long, long ago. It's always some kind of thing to tell you to switch off your reality checking. We're now entering another world. So this would include today fiction, virtual reality games, TV, all sorts of things where any reference to reality is suspended temporarily. It's basically kind of a play, playing with images or stories. One advantage or important function of these fairy tales, or this what I would call the imaginal mode, would be that you can think of things that ordinarily you wouldn't come up with by playing with ideas, for example, or brainstorming. And I thought we'd do a little exercise to kind of show how this might help. Right now, we'll take a few minutes, and everybody will write their own fairy tale. And there'll be three rules. The first is you must begin with once upon a time. You must end with and they lived happily ever after. And you only have 5 minutes. But don't start yet. The reason for the time limit is to have you just write so that stuff comes out spontaneously and the editor doesn't get going saying, oh, is that right, or is this a good story plot or something like that. And the reason for the happy ending, which fairy tales have, is to force a solution. So what you might do is think of some problem that you're struggling with now before you start writing. And the fairy tale structure will often force a happy ending and a surprising solution may appear. So think of some problem or issue you've been wrestling with. And don't start writing yet.
You want this on or
not? You can keep it on. Everybody have a paper, pencil, or something to write on? Everybody got some issue in mind? Okay, start. And I'll give you a 2 minute warning before the end and 1 minute. Don't forget, once upon a time, the beginning. difficult to end with, and they lived happily ever after. Now comes the fun part. Turn to someone next to you and read your fairy tale to each other. Everybody have a chance to tell their story? Oh, what came up for everyone? Anybody want to share?
I didn't find jokes on your types of stories. My fairy tale, there was a middle-aged married couple lived in the suburbs, well-educated, well-connected, and well-off, and often they gathered with others like themselves to eat and drink with one another. The women gathered together and shared reports of personal and family problems, seeking wisdom and solutions from one another. The men gathered apart and told jokes. Generally, there was quiet as they listened, and then an explosion of noise as they laughed, pretending to enjoy the surprise endings. When the couples returned home, everyone was lonely. Soon, everyone entered old age, got divorced, and lived happily ever after. Once upon a time, there was a woman, rich in years but poor in confidence. She used her experience to bolster herself, and for the most part, it worked. One day, she opened her front door, and there was a dragon, smiling at her. She was enchanted and invited the dragon in. She and the dragon decided to live together. For a while, all went well. She caught small rodents for the dragon to eat. She built a large straw bed for the dragon to sleep in. She grew tired of doing so much work. She didn't like rodents and sleeping on a straw bed anyway. One day she left, and on her way in the bright sunshine, she noticed or thought someone was walking besides her. It was her shadow. She laughed, and they lived happily ever after.
This fairy tale that I wrote came out of anticipation. My wife and I, in a couple of weeks, are supposed to go to Singapore and Indonesia. And it's sort of been sticking in my mind that this thought of going to Indonesia. So I wrote, once upon a time, a man and a woman decided to go on a long trip to a faraway land. This land was filled with beauty and dance and ritual, and had a few Komodo dragons thrown in for excitement. But the land was ruled over by an old king. He had been wounded by greed and had hoarded the riches of his realm, but it still had a fascinating beauty, which drew people from far and near. Then one day, the young people had had enough of the old king. They shouted, "We've had enough!" This cry got louder and louder, and soon made its way across the seas. The man and woman heard this cry and wondered about going to such a fascinating kingdom after all. But they put their trust in the energy of youth and the demand for freedom, and went to share in the beauty and the energy. They had an exciting time and lived happily ever after.
to Judith's story.
Once upon a time, there was a twosome. This was not a gruesome twosome, but it was a loosome twosome. And sometimes it was a loosome twosome. From the beginning, this loosome twosome had been given a very great challenge by the king of the universe. Although both of them had very good eyes, and even glasses to boot, neither of them could actually see very well. Each of them had a particular pair of lenses through which the entire world appeared to them, including each other. Now, it so happened that in each one of them were many, many people, all of whom had the task of joining together into a very well-synchronized working unit. But without the ability to see, inwardly and outwardly, all these characters, these two were at constant sixes and sevens. 1 minute mark. After many dragon fights, false starts, mountain scalings, and depth charges, they suddenly both discovered that when their glasses were knocked off, they saw clearly all the parts and how they fit together. And putting all these puzzle parts together, they lived happily ever after.
This is dedicated to Narcissa's small group. Once upon a time, there was a crippled woman who had to stay always in her report mode, factual, journalistic, corroboratable. She had had a spell cast upon her when she was young and vulnerable by a ghoulie. In her 72nd year of life, she happened into a workshop at a conference where she was given a gift of what was to her questionable value, that she was crippled, although she had never known it. It was only by exposure to others, trusting and sharing, that she came to know that she could turn to the source of all wisdom, Sophia, and stop looking always through that dark glass. She made a decision to do so and lived happily ever after.
One last one.
Once upon a time, there was a woman who always traveled alone. She spent much time with people, but her journey would always include only herself. One day, she was traveling down an unfamiliar path and came across a small little man. He asked her where she was going, and she said, "Down the path." He asked, "Where to?" And she said, "I'm not sure. I only know what I've come to so far." The little man was surprised and intrigued. He had always known where his path led and asked if he could join her. The woman was upset by the request. She didn't want to have to take care of the little man along the way and didn't know what he would need. As they continued together, she tried to work out whether or not she wanted him to travel with her. As they continued together, she tried to work out whether or not she wanted him to travel with her as they passed many wonderful sights. And before she knew it, they reached a beautiful lake. There they sat, and he shared with her a delicious lunch. They passed the rest of the day basking in the sun, and she continued making her decision as they lived happily ever after.
Well, why don't we go on? Maybe one last one in the bathroom.
This is a report to my group. Once upon a time, there was a maze. A young woman came upon the maze, and seeing others entering, she did likewise. She noticed that each was alone. As they passed, She greeted each one and embraced them. When she reached the center, she lay down in it. When she arose, she was alone. And it was then that she realized she was God. And she lived happily ever after.
What's amazing, what does come up when you encourage us to. What I would suggest is that you look at these maybe in a week or so, not soon. When the critic gets going, it kills the fairy tale. The fairy tales need to kind of sit by themselves a while. And again, the central element of a fairy tale is suspending any reality considerations. Actually, that was how I got started, was writing my own fairy tales. When meditating in medical school, I would get these vivid images, which I realized were endings to fairy tales. So I sat down and wrote them out. And it turns out that these matched issues I would be working on in the future. I mean, it was really sort of precognitive kind of stuff, like the unconscious knew. So that might happen with you also. The next type of story are myths. And these are usually about superhuman, supernatural things. And the central element, I think, is a universal aura, or that they refer to something infinite or indefinite. And like an archetype would be a good example. The archetype of the, say, the mother doesn't just refer to a particular person, but to all mothers everywhere for all time. So you have two elements here, would be the story, and then its reference to every place, all the time. And since you're dealing with something mysterious and infinite, the story can only be a metaphor. So, any questions before we go on to a little exercise or comments? Oh, I should mention there are actually two kinds of myths you could categorize them. One would be affective and the other abstract. By affective, I mean lots of affect, lots of emotion, like when you get really mad at somebody, you say, you always blah, 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 or you never blah, blah, blah. And the always and never is the universal element that tells you you're dealing with a myth or a mythic element. And actually, cognitive therapy goes exactly for these mythic statements, like, I never will succeed, or nobody will ever love me, and targets that and then makes them judge whether it's true or not. Since we don't have a lot of prominent publicly shared myths, myths do take this format now, more personal, always or never statements. The other one would be an abstract myth, again with the universal element. What would be a good example? I have one down here. Well, another effective example, which I shouldn't miss, would be romantic love, where you fall in love with somebody and you feel like, this will last forever. I love everything about you. No matter what you do, I'll always love you. And that would be like certainly an effective myth. Now, myth doesn't necessarily mean false, it just means universal. So an example of an abstract myth would be scientific laws like E equals MC squared. It's referring to every situation everywhere, which obviously we can't know is true. So science, technically, when it deals with universals, is in the mythic mode. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Can you stand up and wait for the mic?
Can you review what you said about myths in the beginning? How you characterized it?
Did everybody hear that? Wanted me to repeat how I characterize myth. Myth usually will always involve some kind of supernatural element in the classical myth about gods and heroes and stuff like that. And if you look at the logical essence of it, it has a reference to something infinite or indefinite. It's a story with some transcendent reference. It doesn't refer to any specific instance. So like transcendence would be the essence of it. And that would be related to universalization. Does that make sense? I'm a thinking type, so it makes sense to me.